You know what? We're going to call an audible here. We're going to be joined by Cody Decker. We're going to talk a little bit of Royals baseball. He played Major League Baseball. He also does fantastic work for Mad Dog Sports Radio. Let's go to the phone lines and talk some Royals as they are one game away or one loss away from the postseason. Cody, man, happy to have you join us, man.
Jarrington, how you doing, my guy?
Doing fantastic, man. Let's just start with this. I do want to get your thoughts and opinions on the Royals, but I have to ask you, as a former Major League player, what was it like to see the scene in Oakland as they played their final home game yesterday?
Heartbroken. Truly, truly heartbreaking stuff. I can't stress this enough. You didn't listen to what Mark Kotze said before the game or after the game, or just the fact that this is a stadium that is a god-awful stadium. We can all agree that the Coliseum is bad, but that's a stadium that has a capacity of 47,000 people. The Cleveland Browns, before they moved over to Baltimore, they had a stadium that had what? 65,000 people. They put 40,000 people in their final game. You have a team like the Expos, who had a stadium that had 55,000 people. They've had 35,000 people at their final game. 47,000 seats capacity over in the Coliseum. All 47,000 seats were filled. This is not a fan problem. This is an owner problem. This is a John Fisher problem. And it makes me sick that not only has John Fisher physically gotten away with this borderline criminal activity, Major League Baseball has allowed it. It's a tragic day for the game.
I got a chance to go to the Coliseum a couple of weeks ago. I just wanted to see it. You know, I understood that things were winding down. I would never get this opportunity. And I don't think people realize it until you go to that part of the country and see how proud the people are to be from Oakland and how much of a sense of a community it is. And it's sad to see that over the course of the last, 8 years, I mean, their basketball team moved across the Bay. Their football team is now in Las Vegas. And now their baseball team is moving to Sacramento, Las Vegas, or wherever they're about to go.
Yeah, and on top of that, like, I give the argument a little bit, and I hear what everybody's saying, because don't think that Oakland, the city of Oakland, doesn't have at least a semblance of blame to have on this. Yeah, you can put some on there, but I'm giving them maybe 5% here, to be very clear. It's not a lot. Now, the Raiders, they were always a fickle franchise anyways. Trust me, I'm a diehard Raider fan, but that's because I grew up a Los Angeles Raider fan, and as far as the Golden State Warriors, I know they're not in Oakland, but they at least moved across the Bay. The Oakland A's, it says on the building, rooted in Oakland. They've been there for 57 years. It's just, as far as I'm concerned, it's a dark day in baseball for that. And not only that, why won't anyone ask the question that I asked today? Who actually wants this to happen? Who actually wants the A's to be in Vegas? I have yet to meet one person.
Right now, we're talking to Cody Decker, getting his thoughts on baseball. We'll get to the Royals here coming up in just a bit as they are one game out of the playoff picture. Let's start with the division as a whole, because right now, I mean, there's only three teams from the division that can make the wild card. It's either Detroit, Kansas City, or Minnesota, three varying degrees of things. Tigers, they have been the hottest team in baseball over the course of the last 6 weeks. What has changed for the Tigers?
That's a hell of a question. You want me? This is the honest answer, and this is an answer that I don't think a lot of people are willing to give you. I have no idea, Carrington. What the living hell did they just do? They sold at the deadline. They lost their highest paid player in Javi Baez, and they got so much better. It's unbelievable. Like, Skubal, off the charts this season. He's winning the Cy Young as he deserves to. And I even appreciate the White Sox with their little gamesmanship. Like Xavier Nady, Grady Sizemore saying that they're going to throw Crochet as if that's some sort of weird threat against the Tigers. Garrett Crochet hasn't thrown a game past the fourth inning in 2 months, so I don't really think that's the dangerous threat it is. Right now, it's all for the Kansas City Royals and the Detroit Tigers to lose, quite frankly. And I don't think it's going to be for them to lose at all. I think the Twins have put themselves in a position where, listen, the magic number is one. They're three games back of both of these teams. We're getting the Kansas City Royals. We're getting the Detroit Tigers. And I'm not going to lie to you, man, I dig it. As a former Royal especially, let's go. I didn't expect this. I thought they were taking a step forward this year. I didn't expect the step forward to be playoffs right out the gate. And I can't be more excited for the city of Kansas City.
100%. Let me get you this last question on the Tigers, and then we'll transition to the Royals. When it comes to the Tigers, could you see them really making go of this thing? Because they feel like the 2014 Royals just pops up out of nowhere in the final 6 weeks of the season, and nobody wants to play them once we get to October. This is a team that pitches it really well, plays good defense, and I think it'd be a matchup problem for just about anybody. How far do you think this Tigers team could take it?
They could go deep, because here's the reason. And I don't think it's a go deep because of what they have on paper. I think they got a good bullpen and a good starting staff and a vibrant young offensive core. However, when it comes to the playoffs in baseball specifically, it's not the best team. It's the hottest team. And going into the playoffs right now, who is hotter than the Detroit Tigers? The question is, can they keep that streak going for another 30-plus days? I don't know. I do think there is a team out there that it screams to me 2015 Kansas City Royals, but in my eyes, it ain't the Tigers. That would be the San Diego Padres.
Right now, we're talking to Cody for minutes. All right, I want to get your thoughts on the Royals. Here's where I am with the Royals. I don't question their pitching heading into the postseason. I don't even question their bullpen as you head into the postseason. I think their bullpen has been good the last 3 weeks. I question if they can score enough to really make things interesting against whomever they play in the wild card series.
It's going to come down to this. How many pitches to swing at is Bobby Witt Jr. going to get? How many pitches to swing at is Salvi Perez going to get to swing at? This is just going to be an interesting thing, and in how they're going to be pitched, how they're going to be worked. I'm fascinated. This team can offensively do some damage, but they have had some struggles as of late. And at the end of the day, when you are leaning on one to two guys specifically to do all your damage, it's a tough prospect. But like you mentioned, that pitching. And let's not mince words here. In 2015, Eric Hosmer, solid baseball player. Mike Moustakas, solid baseball player. Lorenzo Cain, solid baseball player. Good ball players. But we're not going to sit here and pretend that the Kansas City Royals won their 2015 World Series because they could swing the bat. They couldn't, compared to just about everybody else. What they had was the single best bullpen maybe assembled in the previous 20 years. If the Royals are beating you in the fifth, you lose. And that's why they won that World Series.
This just isn't a Royals question. This goes for any team in the American League. I'm guessing you much rather play the Orioles than play the Astros if you could pick.
150%. Keep me away from the Astros at all costs, and it's not because they're the better team. It's simply because the Astros have too many times. I hate it. I don't want them in the playoffs. I am so mad at three teams specifically in the AL West. Two of those teams are the Mariners, by the way. I'm furious with the Mariners. But the Astros, man, yeah, you don't want to run into them in October, plain and simple, because they do it every year.
Yeah, every single year. The Orioles are just one of those teams that I don't want to compare them to the Chiefs because no one is like the Chiefs, but it feels very Chiefs-esque. All you got to do is just get into the dance. And if you get into the dance, you can be a problem for anybody. We saw that last year with the Chiefs. That wasn't one of their better teams. They won the Super Bowl. When you look at this Astros team, I don't look at there as being a favorite in the American League. I don't want anything to do with them.
No, completely. And I agree with you. I think the Chiefs comparison is actually a lot more astute than you get a credit for because, yeah, no one's the Chiefs. But like you said, last year, the Chiefs were what? I'm a Raider fan. I watched my Raiders on Christmas Day beat the Chiefs and legitimately beat them. Then the Chiefs went and did their thing like they always do. I watched countless teams this year beat the Astros into submission. Watch what they do in October. I'm not happy about it, but we know it's coming.
Right now, we're talking to Cody Decker here for a couple of more minutes. I asked you what happened with the Tigers and how they really got things going. I'll ask you that same question about the Twins. What happened with the Twins? It felt like they were in this thing, and over the course of the last 6 weeks, they have fallen apart.
I really think it's kind of on all of us. If you're a person that believes in the Minnesota Twins, at this point, it's kind of on you. They do this year in, year out. They have the pieces. Byron Buxton is a bona fide star, plain and simple. They have the second best closer in the game behind Class A over there in Cleveland. They have everything to win. Joyce, if he could just stay healthy, the guy's a superstar. That's the problem. None of these guys stay healthy. When Carlos Correa is the guy you're banking on to be healthy on top of everybody else that's not healthy, how are you expected to ever win a title in Minnesota?
No, that's a great question. Just watching this team, it was funny because yesterday we had people on from Minnesota to kind of get their perspective. And I would say the Royals fans have grown very hopeful over the last couple of days. Makes sense. You won your series. You took care of business. Where Twins fans, they are ready to move on to football season or basketball, anything but baseball.
You're right. Those Vikings and all their championship glory. Sure, sure, sure. Get ready for more football.
No, that's certainly the case. I'll get one National League question from you, and then we'll get you out of here, Cody. We appreciate your time. Who do you like in the National League? Give me a sleeper that you could see kind of like Detroit that could potentially go on a run.
I already gave it to you. You may not have noticed, but man, I am terrified for the Los Angeles Dodgers for one reason and one reason only. I've been saying Dodgers Yankees from Jump Street before the season started. I even took out a little gambling flyer before the season even started on it. And I truly think I might be wrong because the San Diego Padres have a bullpen that could beat anybody. The San Diego Padres scare the living hell out of me. They got four bona fide starters, the best bullpen in the game. Also, when I compared them to that Kansas City Royals 2015 team, I'm comparing that with the bullpen specifically. The only difference between that Kansas City Royals team and this current Padre team, this current Padre team also has Fernando Tatis Jr., Manny Machado, Jackson Merrill, Jake Cronenworth, and that's just four of the names. This team offensively can go toe-to-toe with anybody, including the Los Angeles Dodgers. This is going to be one hell of an October, man.
I'll get you out of here with this, actually. I lied. I have a stat for you. It's not a question. So Major League Baseball, they tweeted this out, their PR team. So back in 2021, three-hour baseball games, 391. In 2022, it was at 232. There has been seven of these games so far. I think back to it. I remember people hated the idea of the pitch clock, Cody. Look at what it's done. It's made baseball a far more enjoyable product.
Guys, you can be mad at Rob Manfred for anything he's done wrong in his career, and he's made mistakes. But for these last 3 years, Rob Manfred has been phenomenal for the game. He gave us the National League DH. He gave us this pitch clock. He gave us the best WBC we ever saw. Baseball right now, even though nationally it's not quite at the level it should be compared to like football and basketball right now when it comes to the national narrative, regionally, it's still as powerful as it's ever been, and the game of baseball is honestly better right now than it's ever been. Now, if we can just get past that little aspect of making baseball back to the national topic again, then Rob Manfred will go down as one of the better commissioners in baseball history. And I know baseball fans don't like hearing that. You know how I know that? I'm an ex-baseball player. I don't even like saying it.
Well, you know what? I mean, step one would be eliminating the blackout. If they want people to get back into falling in love with baseball, they got to make it way easier to watch it on television.
Dude, you ain't lying. It is unforgivable that we still deal with these blackouts.
That is our guy, Cody Decker, joining us on the show today. He played in the major leagues. He also works at Mad Dog Sports Radio. Happy to have him join us today to take a closer look at baseball as we are entering the final weekend of the season. Cody, great stuff, man. I appreciate you.
Hey, man, go Kansas City. I still got all my KC gear. I need to have a reason to wear it, boys.
Absolutely. They're going to give you one next week, man. We appreciate that. That is Cody Decker joining us on the show today. Coming up, we'll get back to the Chiefs. I also want to give you guys a stat about Salvador Perez. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Rob, I have a question that has nothing to do with what we've been talking about. We won't spend too much time on it. Vince Carter is getting his number retired for the Toronto Raptors. Certainly understandable. When you think of Vince Carter, do you think of the dunk contest or the Olympics?
Dunk contest, because I think his it's over hand gesture is the most iconic thing we saw from that era.
I've never seen a dunk like when he jumped over that guy in the Olympics, though. Like, every time you see it, it's still, how in the world did you do that?
But remember, that was when games were on like USA or they were on the Family Networks. It wasn't like, and there was no social media. So, like, you had to be watching that because it was all still frames on SportsCenter because they didn't own the rights. The Olympics owned the rights. So, yeah, if you saw it live or post-mortem with YouTube, it was wow. But no one saw it initially. So I still think it's the it's over dunk contest move.
I will say this, that it is pretty incredible to be so good at something that everyone just knows that you were the best at it. Like, Vince Carter is the best dunker that we have ever seen. There have been some great ones. Like, Zach LaVine is special. Aaron Gordon. Guys have put on some all-time performances in the dunk contest. There is nobody better at dunking a basketball than Vince Carter. You want to talk about hops. Vince Carter was so good at dunking a basketball, he had us believing that those Nike shocks could actually make us jump higher for a little bit. Like, that was a thing for a 2-3 year stretch.
I also think that Team USA, that was the Team USA that failed to get bronze, right? They lose to Argentina.
No, that was before them.
Okay.
Yeah, that was before them.
I always conflate those two, because if he was on that team that was bad, that also affects things.
Yeah, no, that was before one. That was the one right before that one. The next
one. That was
the
Larry Brown, Allen Iverson. Okay,
the next
one,
yeah. Because that was the 2000 Olympics, the one you're thinking of, the 04 Olympics. That was when LeBron and them were young in the league. And yeah, they got absolutely smoked. All right, let's get back to talking about the Chiefs. We'll bounce back and forth. We'll talk some Royals. We'll talk some Chiefs. We'll talk some college football. We'll do a little bit of that. I do want to get Rob's opinion on his Jayhawks, as they have a game. They have four games in Arrowhead. One of them is coming up this weekend. Also, K-State, they have a very important game this weekend as well. They have a home game against Oklahoma State. It feels like an elimination game in the Big 12. I don't think you can have two losses in Big 12 play and expect to play for the Big 12 championship. So one of those two teams is getting eliminated. Let's play for you guys what Travis Kelce had to say. He said that he is not worried about stats.
We're always constantly working to get better here. That's always been my focus. I think this year stats may say something different, but at the same time, you still see the same person inside this building. And that's all I really care about. You know, I'm my own worst critic. Everything outside of this building is just noise, respectively, guys.
You ain't got to say respectively, Travis Kelce. That's perfectly fine. I'll play one more thing, and I'll give you guys some thoughts on this. So this is Travis Kelce asking, are defenses playing him differently?
Every single year is different. You know, I think with the pieces that we have, teams are playing us a little bit different than they were last year. And they're playing Patrick different than they were last year. I think you're seeing teams early on play a little bit softer, making us drive an entire way down the field instead of and just taking away those big shots. And I think Pat's doing a great job of getting the ball in everyone's hand.
All right. If I can just point something out without you guys getting upset, I kind of feel like they're trying to tell us two different things right now about Travis Kelce. One of the things is teams are playing this too high safety look, taking away the deep pass, and that is why things are the way that they are. They're also trying to tell me that teams are double and triple teaming Travis Kelce. You cannot do both defensively. You only have 11 players. You can't be playing two high safeties deep down the field to take away the deep pass, and you also got two or three guys that can clog up the middle of the field to take away Travis Kelce. It is impossible to do both. So he's either being double and triple teamed, which should open things up down the field, or they're not. They got to pick which one. And I feel like this week we have heard both things. We've heard that he's open and Pat's not seeing him. He's also being double and triple teamed, and that's why they're not able to get him the ball. I need them to sit down. Let's calculate this thing a little bit better. Let's figure out what we can do to get Travis Kelce going, because they need to get Travis Kelce going. They have to at some point. I know it's the regular season and no one cares, but I think everyone would agree they cannot do this thing without a better version of Travis Kelce. And maybe this thing is just going to be now that he's a 700, 800 yard tight end and we don't care about the stats anymore, and you're just hoping that he has three or four special Sundays in January left. I can live with that if that's the case, but I just feel like this week we've tried to all come up with, hey, why is this thing that has been so good for so long, why is it struggling a little bit? And I feel like they've given us four or five different answers on why that is. I would like to play for you guys. Here's Travis Kelce. He was asked about the offense, and he knows the offense isn't where it needs to be.
I think there is that a bit of understanding of we're going to have to keep working, and we're not where we want to be, and knowing that that we have the entire year to get there. You know, obviously we want to be the best we can right now. You know, we want to win every single ball game we can, but at the same time, it's there's a sense of urgency throughout the week to get things right for the opponent that we're playing. And then on top of that, when we're watching the games in review, we're just nonstop trying to critique ourselves to get better. So
I will say this. Kelce obviously has the right attitude about it. He has the right attitude about it. It's three games. There's no reason to worry about it if you've put the work in. It's going to happen. It's going to come. So I think from that perspective, the Chiefs have played things correctly this week. They noticed that it is a thing. It was talked about on the New Heights podcast, and this week, all three of them talked about it. Patrick has been asked about it. Andy has been asked about it, and they made Travis Kelce available to the media this week. You guys follow the Chiefs enough to know he is not made available to the media every single week. They asked Travis if he wants to talk, and he agreed to talk to the media, and you have to know what the questions are about. No one's asking you questions about your girlfriend this week. Not when you got 69 yards receiving through the first three games. We don't care if she shows up to the game or not. How do we get you going? How do we get you on the right page? He knew when he agreed to do the interview today what the questions were going to be about. I thought he handled it very well. I want to play the last cut for you guys for Travis Kelce. Here's what he had to say about the team starting 3-0.
I think I'm fortunate I've had the success in the past. And I realize that the ball can't always go to one person. It can't always, you know, get in my hands. But at the same time, I got all the trust in 1-5 to make the right decision. And he's been making great decisions. He, you know, we might not be putting up as much points as we want to, but at the same time, we're 3-0 and we're doing something right.
100%. No, this is the definition of first world problems. I say this about the Chiefs, that the Chiefs are sort of judged by a different metric. I don't really get caught up in the regular season wins. I know that you guys are undefeated, so everything's great. I don't really get caught up into that. To me, it's much more of a, are you playing at a level right now that can help you win the Super Bowl? Last year when this team was winning and winning the division, you just noticed, hey, something's off with this wide receiver room, and they're going to need to change some things if they're going to get back on track for the postseason. They changed some things. Kadarius Toney wasn't playing anymore. Sky Moore wasn't playing anymore, and they stopped throwing the ball to MVS. That was a major change in the second half of the season. I think everyone can identify something's a little bit off with Travis Kelce. We need to get things going with Travis Kelce. All right, let's see. That's why this week is very, very important to me. You are going up against a team that doesn't have its top corner, against a team that you have had a lot of success against from an individual standpoint, and they don't have their number one safety in Derwin James available. If there is a game to get your tight end back on track, it's this one against the Los Angeles Chargers. It's Sunday against the Chargers. You don't need to go out there and have 125 yards receiving and three touchdowns. I don't think that's what people are expecting. But you're a guy that usually is a 1,000-yard guy and just a focal point to the offense, and that's not what you've been so far this year. So if you want to quiet the conversation around Travis Kelce, catch the football. Have four catches for 64 yards and a touchdown, and Travis Kelce is not a point of conversation next week. But if he has another slow game, it will continue. They play Monday Night Football next week, and his brother is on the broadcast. It will continue to be a talking point until Travis Kelce puts up a big number.
I don't think I see it that way. I think Travis Kelce's in a no-win situation this week because I think, as we pointed out from the start, the Chargers are a better IR team right now than they are team on the football field. Derwin James suspension, I just saw it come across on my social media. Joey Bosa, Joe Alt, Rashawn Slater, Darius Davis, Junior Colson, all not practicing today. Justin Herbert did start practice. But everything, me, you, the national media, everyone is identifying, yeah, because of the Chargers' injuries, Kelce should go eat. So I think if he goes out and dominates, people are going to say, oh, yeah, well, you're supposed to do that. And if he doesn't go out and dominate,
I would say this. That will not be my stance.
I'm not saying it will be.
I don't care. At this point, I just want to see Travis Kelce play well this week.
That's
so
fair.
My stance is not going to be, if Kelce comes out here and has four catches, five catches for 65 yards and a touchdown, my stance on Monday is not going to be, well, you were supposed to do that. It's the Chargers. It's been a while in a regular season. I understand the postseason is different. He has one touchdown in his last 11 games in the regular season. He has 69 yards receiving. So if he doubles his receiving total this weekend, I do not care the opponent it's against. It's the National Football League. Everybody is dealing with injuries right now. Everybody is banged up. Surely some teams are more banged up than other teams in the National Football League. Some teams are more banged up than other. I don't care at this point. It's the National Football League. Play well and win.
I'll also say, other side of that coin and why I think it's a little bit of no win is if he struggles, it's not going to, it's the conversation is going to go from the terms we use to describe it are going to change. You see a lot of the terms sluggish start, slow start, you know, not quite what he statistically usually is. Those are the terms we are using now to describe Travis Kelce. If you struggle against the Chargers, it is going to be alarm bells across the National Football League. If he goes out and has 2 for 27 on 4 targets, that's around what he did against Atlanta. It is not going to be a conversation of, oh, he's just sluggish, or it's a statistical thing, or it is going to be a 5-alarm fire. What is wrong with Travis Kelce? And if you think Mad Dog and Stephen A. screaming at each other was the only time you see that conversation this week, let him struggle against the Chargers and name a show, and they're going to be talking about it. Random podcasts on YouTube will be talking about it. So that's why I think he's in a little bit of no win. You might not say, oh, it's the Chargers, they're beat up. There are going to be people who say, okay, I need to see more before I say you're back. But if he struggles, it is, whoa, Nelly, this is a real, real, real problem. And even the most adamant, hey, it doesn't matter, guy on the text line, if he goes 2 for 27, we'll have to come around and say, rut-row, something is wrong.
Coming up in a little bit, we will catch up with Nate Taylor of The Athletic. He is going to join us coming up at the top of the hour. Let's talk a little bit of college football here. Rob, your team, the Kansas Jayhawks, they are at home, so to speak, a neutral site, but they're at home against TCU. It's basically a coin flip. KU's a 2-point favorite. That's basically because they're at home. How are you feeling heading into this weekend? This was supposed to be. KU was supposed to be undefeated, barreling towards the matchup against K-State to potentially determine who is going to go to the Big 12. That's obviously not the way the season has played out for the Jayhawks. I don't feel a whole lot of buzz right now about KU, and it makes sense. The Chiefs are undefeated and the Royals are going to the postseason, but what kind of crowd, what kind of energy are you expecting this weekend out at Arrowhead?
Marginal. I was talking with Gold about this earlier because Gold's going out there. He's got a bachelor party, I think, is going out there. And we were joking, what's the number going to be? I think KU fans would be happy if they got to 40 this weekend. And I know that's around, like, what, a little more than half of the stadium, and that's not what KU football wanted to see when they were at Arrowhead, and that's not what the goal is. But I know their season ticket numbers are pretty good, so I don't think it's going to crater, but I think you're going to see 40,000 people out there. I also think KU, if KU is going to salvage their season, and salvage is the important word, I'm not talking like, oh, they can salvage and still go to the Big 12 title game. I'm talking like, can they be a bowl team and keep any level of fan interest as the season progresses? Because this is not unique to Kansas. If teams are bad in September, October, it's hard to get fans to care in November.
Especially when it gets cold. And so, I would say also with KU, where fans are just very easily going to shift to, they're going to be ranked top 3 preseason in basketball.
KU is probably worse than most schools, but most schools struggle with this. So this is a salvage the season type of game. If you're going to have any level of interest at Arrowhead going forward, you have to win this one. And you don't have to dominate. You just have to get a W and have fans walk out of the building happy. But 40 feels like the number. That feels like what the attendance is going to be. A nice crowd in the lower bowl and a spattering in the upper tank. Kind of what we saw. Remember when Team USA played Uruguay? It's going to feel like that.
I mean, it really comes down to what version of Jalen Daniels are they going to get. I mean, Jalen Daniels has been bad so far this season. I'll give you the numbers. He is completing 56.3% of his passes. He has 4 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. Almost every time that KU goes out there, he throws 1 or 2 critical interceptions. You are not winning in conference play if that is the case. These games are too close. These teams, the talent level is too close to overcome those things. Do you continue to get negative quarterback play the way that they have so far from him? He's given you a little bit on the ground. It hasn't really been, but I mean, this team, you are not going to win just with Devin Neal, who has been amazing. Devin Neal is averaging 6 yards a carry. He's been one of the 5 best running backs in college football. Kind of feels like that's all they have offensively, especially with it. Luke Grimm's fine. Skinner's fine. Arnold is fine. But they're not. These aren't guys that are going to be playing on Sundays at some point. You got one guy right now that's going to be playing on Sunday. It's Devin Neal. And your quarterback just turns the ball over way too much, I think, to pick you to win this game. I think you have to pick TCU until proven otherwise.
I think TCU plus points, too. Like, the way Kansas turns the ball over, I think if you're getting points, even if it's a road game, I think you have to take TCU. The one redeeming quality for me as a KU fan is TCU's defense is horrible. If KU's going to get the offense right, this is the week to do it.
I agree.
They give up 32 points a game. They gave up 66 to SMU last week. I know SMU's in the ACC now, so we have to consider them a Power 4 team, but SMU should not be putting 66 up on a Big 12 team. Uh-uh. Stanford, who's not very good, put up numbers on this team. Like, if Jalen Daniels and co. are going to get right, it's against this bad defense. But you're right. TCU, with points, has to be the play because there's no evidence Jalen Daniels is going to get right.
K-State has Oklahoma State tomorrow. I like K-State in this game. I think there's a chance that K-State runs away from Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma State is one of the more overrated, overvalued teams so far in college football. They squeaked by Arkansas in week two. Arkansas dominated that game for most of it. And they have a star running back in Ollie Gordon. They just haven't been able to get him going of late. I think teams kind of know that he's all they have offensively, and they're really keying in on him. I mean, we're talking about a guy who ran for 5 yards a carry his first season, ran for 6.1 yards per carry his second year. Rob, he's averaging 3.5 yards per carry. He only has one 100-yard rushing day so far this season. He was really good in week one, 28 carries for 126 yards. The last 3 weeks, he hasn't run for 50 yards in this game. If you can make Oklahoma State one-dimensional and make them throw the football, you beat them. I think that that coaching staff and K-State figure out a way to eliminate Ollie Gordon again and have him be a non-factor. I think K-State takes care of business.
I have K-State minus the 4.5, but a lot of that is because we talk a lot on this show, and it's not like some secret, oh, only this show talks about it. No one else knows it. You know where freshman or sophomore or young quarterbacks are better? They're better at home.
At home.
They are. I mean, I know that I think he's a redshirt or maybe a true sophomore in Avery Johnson because he played in so many games last year, but he had attempted under 50 passes coming into the season. He's basically a freshman. He got rocked on the road and struggled, but the road is a different ball game for college sports. You come back home, friendly confines, you get that run game going, the crowd isn't going to get up against you, turnovers aren't going to feel like the sky is falling. I like K-State to get back for all the reasons you said about Oklahoma State. I'm not a super big Oklahoma State believer, but on top of that, Avery Johnson is just going to play better at home because young quarterbacks always play better at home than they do on the road. It's just the nature of college sports.
100%. I also question if Oklahoma State can stop the run. I mean, last week, Micah Bernard, who might be the best running back in college outside of the kid at Boise State. I mean, Micah Bernard had 25 carries for 182 yards rushing on Saturday against this Oklahoma State team. So we know that K-State wants to run the ball. They're going to run the ball with Avery. They're going to run the ball with Dylan Edwards. They're also going to run the ball with Giddens as well. So I think this game plays into K-State style. I think they can run the football effectively. I think they stop Oklahoma State from running the ball effectively as well. I think Oklahoma State wins. I look at this as being sort of an elimination game in the Big 12. I don't think it's realistic to think that you can have two losses in Big 12 conference play and you think that you are playing for a championship. There are just too many teams in the league to think that that's going to be the case. Or you're going to need to lose the exact right two games and hope that you get one of those tiebreaker games. So right now we're talking about there are eight teams in the Big 12 that are undefeated. You can't fall to 0-2 in Big 12 play and think that you can turn things around. So this is a really important game for K-State. If you want to keep your playoff chances and hopes alive, you got to take care of business at home against Oklahoma State. Coming up in about 20 minutes, Nate Taylor is going to join us in studio. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
I mean, I guess I get it. And I want to give you guys this stat about Salvador Perez, and Nate Taylor is going to join us. Someone on the text line. CDOT, you're so confident that the Royals are going to make the postseason. If they don't, I think you should do something for the show or come on or give a sincere apology for your prediction. This is what I don't understand about how you guys treat the Royals compared to all the other teams. You can't say anything even remotely critical of the other teams, and you guys jump down my throat. When it comes to the Royals, it's different. They don't get the protection that the other teams do. You want to know why I'm confident? It isn't even all the way wrapped up into the Royals. I just don't think you guys have been paying attention to the Twins. And I get it. It's not football. It's not college basketball, so you're not keeping up with everybody else. Do you guys want to know the last time that the Twins won three straight games? You want to know when this happened? The last time that the Twins won three straight games was August 15th, 16th, and 17th. You want to know the last time that they swept a series? It was against the Chicago White Sox. You want to know the last time that they swept a series that was against a team that was not the Chicago White Sox? Because that does not count. The last time that they swept a series against a team that was not the White Sox was June 13th through the 16th. So even if you are not confident in the Royals, and okay, fine, whatever. You're not confident in the Royals. I also just don't know how simultaneously you could then be confident in the Twins, who are worse than the Royals and have played worse more recently than the Royals have been. Excuse my French. Grab your nuts. The way y'all act about the Royals is very unbecoming at times. Real shaky energy. I don't know what the Royals need to do for you to get your swagger back when it comes to them, but right now, y'all very swaggerless when it comes to the Royals. It is a coin flip against whoever they play, not named the Astros. Now, against the Astros, I get it. I get it not feeling that way. But man, they can beat the Orioles. They really can beat the Orioles. They can win this series against the Braves. But just, I don't understand being hopeful in the Minnesota Twins. Basically, all the Royals have to do is, it's not get swept and also not expect the Twins to sweep their opponent. That's all they have to do to make the postseason. Like, at this point, I kind of feel like the job is done. Now, you're right. They are not in the postseason, but with that kind of scenario in front of you, I don't even understand how you could even be worried or nervous at this point about the Royals. That's a level of fear that the Royals as an organization have never done anything to warrant. This is the third time they would have made the postseason in the last 40 years. It's not like the Royals have had a lot of these scenarios. Like, I get it with the Chiefs. I don't really get it that much anymore about the scar tissue. And you guys are telling me you're worried about the Colts because of something happened in 1995. That's weird to me given the fact that they're in the middle of a dynasty. But at least I get it with the Chiefs. The Chiefs have so many examples of coming up short in the postseason. The Royals have no examples of coming up short in this scenario. They've never been in this scenario before. Every time they've been in this scenario, they've had an amazing October. Now, I don't think that's what's going to happen with this team, and they're not playing great, so I'm not telling you that this team is going to the postseason, but to have confidence in the Minnesota Twins is just very weird fan energy to me. I don't understand.
I also think, and I saw this earlier on the text line, I'm trying to scroll down and see the text, but someone was talking about, maybe you guys aren't aware of this, but the Braves are good. The Braves are the same as the Royals.
They are.
The Braves are 86 and 71. Okay, so they're a game and a half better than the Royals. This would be like the Royals playing head up against basically the Tigers to end the season. Yes, they're good. They're probably a playoff team if everything breaks right for the Braves. But let's not act like this weekend they're headed to face the 62 Yankees.
Yeah.
Like, the Braves are solid. The idea, the text line is shaky with the idea that, oh, I mean, the Braves are good. How are they even going to win one game? This isn't the 106 loss Royals. They are playing an equal opponent.
Just got to win one game.
If things go super haywire in the first two.
They got Reagans
on
Sunday.
They
got Reagans on Sunday. Yeah.
The lack of confidence is, at least on this show, we are treating the Royals as in. And we are preparing for Monday's show to talk about a postseason team and preparing for games on Tuesday and Wednesday. I don't know where this fear in Kansas City comes from.
I don't get it. I don't know. Some of you were more hopeful that the Jayhawks were going to make the college football playoff than the Royals were going to make the playoff. I don't know. It's just,
I mean, if we're going to do
just
that,
weird to me.
People
have here you go. You're about to throw some hate. My team's still undefeated. Don't throw nothing their way.
Gates fans had them in the Final Four after, oh, you get to face Harvard in round two. People were fired up. Arizona got knocked out. Here we come. We're going to do it.
It was Princeton. I
apologize.
I just want you to be, come on now. I want you to be accurate. It was not Harvard that they lost to as a 15 seed. They lost to Princeton as the 15 seed. Man, they was doing back cuts and it was bad. It was not an enjoyable experience watching them play that game. I just want to make sure that you are official with what you're saying about the Royals. We got a little bit more time. 913-586-7965. We can talk about the Royals until Nate Taylor joins us. He's going to join us coming up in about 5 minutes, and we'll get back to football the rest of the way. We are off at 5 today, so the Royals can play the Atlanta Braves. I did see the weather. It looked pretty sunshiny out there. Now, I don't know how many people are going to be at the game today. It seems like you got a lot of other stuff to be worried about if you live in the Atlanta metro area this weekend. But at least the weather over the stadium that I saw, it looked very sunshiny. If I was the Braves and the Royals, I'd be trying to get two in tonight because you never know what tomorrow is going to look like with the weather. I don't know if this counts as a hot take or not. I think baseball should force, if you're going to build a new stadium, it has to have a retractable roof. There ain't no reason to have rainouts in 2024. Not when you're building these $2 billion ballparks. You guys can't put a roof over it that if something happens, we don't have to move everything around. Just press a button. Press a button, put the roof over there. We'll play the baseball game as normal. People can still come. People still do things in the rain all the time. That's a rule I would love to see baseball adopt. Can you build a roof over your stadium? You can decide whether or not you want to open it and close it. We can't force that. But if it's rain in the forecast, just press a button and we can go play the baseball game. It doesn't make any sense why we have rainouts in 2024, especially when they're building these new stadiums, which feels like every 3 years they avoid it.
I mean, that seems hot takey. It's a sport that takes place in the summer. Even though it goes in the spring and the fall, like, it is mostly a sport we avoid the bad weather season. I don't mind baseball stadiums not having a roof. Like, we're talking about the Twins. Remember the Twins hated having a stadium with a roof, and now, like, they're a happy-go-lucky fan base because they're outside now to watch baseball? I don't think baseball stadiums need a roof. If you're going to say that, you got to feel that way about football, too. That we shouldn't have snow games, anything like that, either.
Football, at least the weather is part of it. People love snowy football games. No one is like, God, you know what? It's raining today. Man, I can't wait to go to the Royals game today. No one has ever said that before. I do want to read this really quickly. CDOT, it's not necessarily that I don't have belief in the Twins. It's just that the Orioles don't have anything to play for. I would like to point out that the Twins just yesterday lost a series to the Miami Marlins, who have less to play for than the Orioles have to play for. The Marlins have had nothing to play for the last 4 months. The Twins have everything to play for. The Twins could have won this race, especially given how poorly the Royals have played. But they have lost 7 of their last 10. They have lost 10 of their last 15. They have lost 14 of their last 20. The Twins are cooked. They're done. It is 1-2-3 Cabo, 1-2-3 Cancun for the Minnesota Twins. I just, no. Maybe the Royals get swept. I don't think they're getting swept this weekend. Maybe they get swept. The Twins have given me no reason to believe that they are winning 3 consecutive games against anybody. I think the Savannah Bananas get one game from the Minnesota Twins the way they have played the last couple of weeks. All right, coming up on the other side, we're going to talk wall-to-wall football for the 4 o'clock hour. Nate Taylor from The Athletic joins us in studio. He wrote a story that said the Chiefs do not have a Travis Kelce problem. We'll get his thoughts on the, I don't know if controversy is the right word, but the conversation around Travis Kelce. Keep right here, it's The Drive.